Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am David Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
Eric Astroslager.
Hello.
And Daryl Loomis.
Hi.
And this is, you know, this works. Kill some time for your weekend and just get you in a great frame of mind just in time for what? Mac, what's coming up this weekend? Is there anything happening this weekend that, like, any Canadian holiday maybe or anything happening?
I'm in fact not a Canadian. me personally, I'm heading to New York City this weekend.
All right, so this will get you in a great frame of mind for Mac McIntyre goes to New York City days.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anything bringing? So we'll start right off with you, Mac. Tell us why you are going to the Big Apple.
I have secured tickets to see a. It's a show.
It's not the clock, is it?
No, sadly, it's not the clock. I wish it was the clock.
Clock, the musical.
that would be
clock
awesome.
With an exclamation point.
No, I've got tickets for Sleep No More, which is something very different, but something that kind of, it, like the clock, it's something that I hear about, and the idea of it just gets in my head, and I have to go and experience it. The idea is that this theater group has taken over the first five floors of this old closed-down hotel, and they've redesigned these five floors. And throughout the quote-unquote show, people in the audience are free to just wander around wherever they want in the hotel and interact with the actors. And there's all kinds of weird, crazy stuff going on throughout the whole show.
Wait, so is it similar to like that Mystery Weekend episode of Saved by the Bell? Same concept, right?
Like... Somewhat.
Okay,
all right. Dave, you think everything's like the Mystery Weekend episode of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, guilty as charged.
You go to the drive-thru to get a sandwich and you wonder if this is the... I don't know.
I should watch that before I go to see Sleep No More for, like,
please
preparation.
Do. You know? Yeah, and you should Twitter it. You know, do it like
I wouldn't... Five. Mac, you want to go in fresh, though. You don't want to spoil the experience for yourself, so I'd wait until afterwards.
Yeah, it's
I wonder
true.
If this,
yeah.
this woman looks like Mr. Jameson in a wig. All right, well, all right. So, man, you're quite the metropolitan New York traveler, aren't you?
I have. I've gone a couple of times now over the last couple of years. It's real easy being in Boston. I can just hop on the train and be in New York in a couple of hours, so it's convenient.
Very
probably
nice.
Probably even faster if you travel by montage.
That's true.
As most people do in the movies.
Nice. All right. So are you going to hit up any of your old haunts from New York?
I don't know yet. You know, I'm only
I just wanted to say that term. I don't know if
you the old haunt? Yeah. Thank That's you. The bar from Castle is the old haunt. Yeah, that's where they
nice.
Go to. I'm only going to be there 2 days, so not a lot of time to see and do everything. So the big number one is to go see Sleep No More, and then I'm just going to play it fast and loose.
Nice.
For the rest of the weekend.
All right, good. So beyond that, anything else you want to report on?
Not too much. I've been busy. I've got a number of different projects I'm working on, but so I haven't made it out to see the movies or anything. But so I'll have more to report next week.
All right, very good. Look forward to hearing your theatrical report too. Hey, speaking of, have you guys heard of the speaking of theater, have you heard of the Magic and Bird theatrical production? Have you heard that? What is that? You know anything about that?
No.
You have not heard about that? Okay. So I just see an ad. It says Magic Bird coming. It's like coming to Broadway or something. So I don't think it's Magic Bird. You know, I think it's like Magic and Bird. So
Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
Yeah, pretty much. Not like
their two-man show, Magic Bird.
That's right.
A bird doing magic.
A bird doing magic. That sounds pretty great too. All right. So Daryl, how about you? What's going on?
Not a whole ton to report. I'm glad to hear the community's coming back on this coming month.
That's right. That's you're here.
And
you know, as one show, one beloved show comes, another one leaves for an extended hiatus. So it's like you can't win with NBC, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, because they need to put that Whitney show on.
We need Whitney. Whitney.
You know, I still think it's too soon for Whitney. I mean, she just died.
That's right. I know. And a comedy, no less.
I know. It just seems tasteless. And to cast a white woman, it just doesn't seem right.
Right. I agree. Is there anything else, or you just want to transmit the joy of the return?
Yeah, I'm happy about that. I watched a very recently a documentary called Winnebago Man that was a lot of fun. That was on the Netflix instant streaming, whatever you call it. Did you ever see the old Winnebago outtakes video of the fella freaking out?
No.
Sometime look up on YouTube Winnebago Man or Angriest Winnebago Salesman. And it's a clip of outtakes from his filming of a industrial video for Winnebago, and it used to make the rounds on like mail order video VHS stuff back in the 90s.
Yes.
And a guy who was obsessed with it found the dude up on top of a mountain in Northern California and made a documentary about him. And it's entertaining, and if you like listening to a crank be a crank, yeah. It's pretty funny.
All right. Very good. Eric, how about you?
I think it's time for a bit of old news. What do
yes,
you say?
Yes, it is.
Sure. Although maybe this is a bit of old blues.
Oh.
What could I mean? I don't know. No.
Anyway, so either Nickelodeon about... show or – I don't know.
Yeah, it's cross-up. No. I'm talking about Blu-rays. So this
All right,
is the...
good.
Went to the infamous local library of great repute and found they had they had the Blu-rays of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi in house, so I took them out because I hadn't seen any of the Star Wars Blu-rays yet, and watched them. They look great. They look and sound really, really good. I'm impressed with what they did.
Worth purchasing, you think?
Probably. And they didn't have Star Wars, but I mean, of course, I've seen all these movies about a billion-ish times, probably.
Yeah.
But it's weird because I haven't seen any of them in probably 10 years. I don't think I've seen a Star Wars movie really in about that long, just because I've seen them before. I don't know. You know, he spent so much time as a kid watching Star Wars that it's been a long time. And it's weird going back with kind of adult eyes and a bit of distance and kind of just to see some of the weird stuff that goes on in the movies. By which I mean, like, I think the first Star Wars is the only one of the movies that has, like, a complete story from beginning to end. It, like, stands alone as its own story.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. The other two, like, I was surprised. I should have realized it. But, like, they really feel like a series of loosely connected mini-adventures that all either tie to the Rebellion or Luke's story with Darth Vader. But they're not – like, Empire Strikes Back isn't really it doesn't tell a complete story. It's, like, a middle part of it's sort of a middle part of the main story. But even then, it's just sort of, like, four – little stories that kind of get stitched together and then all come together at the end in the Cloud City part, which is the best part of the movie. And it's sort of weird that people will kind of hold it up as the best of the three, because I don't see how you can think that when Star Wars is, I think, the best of the three, because it's an actual movie. Like, it's a movie from beginning to end that holds together. Is it weird to say that?
That's
an
interesting approach, I would say. I mean, I would say, I mean, that's good. I don't know. What do you guys think? Max, how are you? What do you think about that?
Well, I think what you're saying is correct, but it's that way by design. You know, they sat down and they said, you know, after the first one was a success, you know, George had allegedly, you know, had a larger story in mind, and so it was, you know, the two movies were sort of designed to be parts of a bigger whole.
Which makes total sense. It's sort of weird to see how not only disconnected everything is, but I mean, there are things that they're cool in the context of the segment of the story that they tell. But they don't necessarily make that big of an impact on what comes before or after. I mean, like, I loved Return of the Jedi as a kid. And, you know, it's kind of always shocked me to hear people say it's the worst of the three. But watching it again, it is the worst of the three. I mean, like, there's stuff in there that, I mean, the Ewoks are kind of annoying. Like, they save the day and they're badasses at the end. But only because the script makes them
right,
that way.
Absolutely.
It's just sort of. It makes the stormtroopers all of a sudden be completely incompetent and able to be taken out by
hitting on the head with like their monster helmets, get hit with sticks in there.
Yeah, and I loved the Jabba stuff when I was a kid, but now like it just seems needlessly. I mean, there's like no way that even a Jedi like Luke could anticipate all the little bits and pieces and like to like the Sarlacc pit and stuff and.
Yeah, right.
He was pretty confident
he was going to catch that lightsaber tossed by R2. If that's a bad toss by R2, movie's over. You know?
Right. I guess the sail barge is going to be that close to the little ship that he was going to.
And so volatile, too. That,
right. Yeah. I mean, so all
the tanks are right underneath the main gun, you know?
Yeah, they really did kind of blow. All those poor people died. I mean, you know, some of them were just hangers on. I mean, you know. So I don't know. I mean, it's part of it is just that, you know, these movies were, they're all ages movies. So when you're a kid, it's just super thrilling. And you know, as an adult, I'm not going to say they're not bad movies at all. They're, you know, they're classics, but they're certainly not flawless. And it's just weird to kind of look back on them now, you know, compared to other movies that work as standalone, you know, movies. And it's probably, I mean, obviously I did the bad thing of watching the second and third part of a three-part story. So, you know, all of a sudden I've taken, even though I know Star Wars so well, you know, taking myself out of it.
It was an interesting exercise. That's interesting. I would say, though, I mean, I am a avowed Kool-Aid drinker of Empire Strikes Back. I just love that so dearly.
I mean, I think
like the tone is just so dark and surprising. Mm-hmm. The lines are like most of the memorable lines, I think, in the whole series come in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And just the jump in technology, like you go from the X-Wing attack on the Death Star in the first Star Wars to just the asteroid chase itself is just, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, there's a lot of great stuff in there, and I think that it definitely has the most memorable and important, like, sequence and twist of the series. But, like, you kind of, once you get past the Hoth stuff, you move on to something else, and then the Hoth stuff doesn't seem that important. I don't know. I mean, I think that, like Max said, they all work, you know, as a whole, and you can't really take them out and expect them to really hold up, but in the same way. But, you know, it was interesting because I read a post last week sometime. Someone wrote this lengthy post where they came up with this new, their own order for watching the movies.
The machete edition,
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting concept.
Yeah, and the basic idea was that, so instead of watching them in release order or in the order of the episodes, neither of which is perfect, what you do is watch Star Wars and then Empire Strikes Back, and then you go back,
mm-hmm,
watch episodes 2 and 3, because the guy argued that Phantom Menace didn't really have, you know, wasn't necessary to the series, and you know, he gave some rather good reasons about why, you know, it's not worth watching. And then go back to Return of the Jedi. So you still maintain the surprise of the Darth Vader twist.
Right.
And then once you find that out, you go back and find out how he became Darth Vader. And then you all come together for the thrilling, or maybe not so thrilling.
And then, so, and this Phantom Menace just like a like an addendum, if you're interested.
He talked about that stuff in the Clone Wars as like extra footage.
Gotcha.
Background.
Gotcha.
So where's the Christmas special fall into it?
That's right.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know. We have to go back. That's true. We haven't fit that into the I don't know where that was. It's an interesting way to kind of approach the, well, if you want to call it the problem of Star Wars. Yeah. But, you know, it's definitely you have this sort of sprawling, you know, story that doesn't necessarily – It was you know, conceived as a whole, but doesn't really work the way Lucas has presented it. I mean, Lucas obviously has some you know, shortcomings when it comes to story and characters and stuff, and then I think that the kind of sprawling nature of the Star Wars movies is sort of the, I don't know, is part of that, if you know what I mean. Like, he creates problems for himself by doing the prequels, which he loves, and then, I don't know, you go back and watch it in order. It was an interesting take on it. So,
well, that's a lot of time spent talking about Star Wars. Very good.
Well, it wasn't the thing that I decided to retire last week.
That's
so
true. I can talk. All right. I don't know, I guess it's me. So I'll just real quick want to talk about the new Avengers trailer, see what you guys thought of it. I've never read a single Avengers comic book, so I don't have any kind of, you know, vested interest in it. I mean, as far as it looking like a cool movie, you know. So tell me, what'd you guys think of it, Mac?
Dave, you read the Ultimates, you said.
Oh, you're right. I'm an idiot. You're right. I read. So, I don't know if I'm going to count that. I'm going to say I'm late to the bandwagon on that. How about that?
Sure.
But I appreciate that, Mac. You're sticking up for my geek cred. I appreciate that.
It's good. You're absolutely right. As long as you lie, you're correct.
That's true. But, you know, certainly not having read any of them, you know, growing up and really, you know, during my formative years, I suppose. I know a lot of people kind of are emotionally invested in this movie. So, you know, Mac, I'll start with you. Have you seen the newest trailer? If so, what do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. I'm really pumped to see the movie. I've enjoyed the Marvel movies so far, and I'm really looking forward to this one. You know, I've heard a lot of complaints about it, a lot of negatives. People are saying, oh, it looks like television or stuff like that, or And a lot of complaints about how it's just, oh, it's just Iron Man 3 and all the other characters getting pushed to the side. And, well, you know, we won't really know any of that till we actually see the movie. But, you know, so I'm doing my best to stay positive about it and really looking forward to it.
All right. I will say that last scene is, well, there's a scene where they do the 360 around the team, you know?
Right.
You've got Thor and his hammer and Captain America and his shield and the Hulk and all of his huge glory, Iron Man with his suit and weapons, and then Black Widow with her gun. It's like, and, you know, these giant, you know, destructive menaces and, you know, Asgard gods are attacking. Not sure what the 9mm is going to do, but hey. Of course, then again, Hawkeye's got a bow and arrow, so I don't know what that's going to do either. Daryl, what about you? Are you a comic guy? Does this movie appeal to you?
I am like you. I don't have a lot of background with the Avengers, but the Marvel movies are okay. I'm a little, I'm basically worried that the Avengers movie is going to wind up being like a supergroup album.
Okay.
You know, where everybody's got a thing and nothing really gets along, but they're all famous.
Gotcha, okay.
And so it's going to have, you know, you're basically looking at what tops 2 hours and 10 minutes, you know, to get stories involving seven superheroes or whatever. You know, it's you're stunting yourself pretty good, I think, with how many characters you're forcing into this. Whereas a comic, you've got innumerable issues to deal with all these things.
Yeah.
So I'm skeptical. I'm sure it'll be fun. I'm sure the effects will look cool and all of that action. But for a satisfying movie, I don't know. I'd probably I'm skeptical, I guess.
All right.
I liked it. I think it looked pretty cool. I think that. I think, Daryl, your skepticism is validated by, you know, most other movies and adaptations that we've seen. I guess the only kind of saving thing is that hopefully what they've done by laying all this groundwork and having all these movies means we can get right into the action and assume that people already kind of know these characters. And I like that in the trailer they show a lot of the internal conflict in the Avengers and kind of make it more about the way those characters interact as opposed to just being, you know, that kind of supergroup type of thing. It's funny, Dave, you mentioned the Black Widow thing, which I totally, you know, picked up on when I watched it. I was like, boy, she has a gun. It reminded me of, I don't know if you're familiar with Mitchell and Webb, the British comedy duo, but they had this sketch show, and one of their sketches was BMX Bandit and Angel Summoner, these two, like, superheroes, And BMX Bandit could, like, ride his bike really, really well, and the other guy could summon angels. So, like, and so every time they come up against someone, they'd be like, well, I can summon these angels, and they'll go in and take them out. Well, I can ride my bike. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's quite funny. But, yeah, she seems a little out of place.
Yeah, so. I guess so. She's like, you know, she's bringing a gun to a... I don't know. Gun to a magic fight, an alien laser fight.
Yeah, gun to a big magic hammer party.
But I thought it did look cool too. So I mean, it's certainly a big magic hammer party. In a really sleazy sounding DVD right there. All right, very cool. Mac, why don't you? Actually, no. Let's zip through what we're talking about, what we're reviewing this week. How about that? We'll go right around the horn real quick. So, Mac, what do you got? Anything cooking you wanna?
Oh boy! Well, I guess that means we got to talk about Jack and Jill with Adam.
Oh Sandler. My God, you poor guy!
Oh really? You got saddled with that?
Yeah, I got that. Yeah.
Wow. No wonder you're running away to New York City.
What can I say? It's Adam Sandler in drag. You know, watching the movie, I kept thinking, you know, why was this made? Why did anybody think this was a good idea? But then it dawned on me. Because the movie is just filled with product placement. Mm-hmm. Just Adam Sandler's character, the Jack character, is a commercial director, and we see him making commercials, and all the products he's making commercials for are prominently displayed throughout the movie. And you know, and when he's filming a commercial for Pepto-Bismol, and then later he's feeling sick, he's, oh man, you know, my stomach's upset, I need some Pepto-Bismol, and he reaches for some and drinks right out of the bottle, holding it so you can see the label.
Right.
And there's stuff like that in almost every scene.
What
you know,
prompted like the marketing director of Pepto-Bismol to land that COVID, you know?
I don't know. But like Jill goes on a game show. She wins a jet ski, and then there's this bits with her riding around on the jet ski. And the whole ending of the movie, the family goes on a cruise on this Royal Caribbean cruise line. Oh. And I know this because there's an announcer. There's this announcer who's like every time they show the boat, you can hear the announcer of the loudspeakers, you know, saying, talking about, welcome to Royal Caribbean, here at the Royal Caribbean Cruise, you've got Royal Caribbean this and Royal Caribbean that. And so it dawned on me that, you know, the producers and the filmmakers, they just took all this product placement money, they took it to the bank, and screw whatever the audience thinks, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's like they're not even caring about making a good movie. They're just loading up advertisements into the movie and living high off the profit. And that's, you know, that's the movie. It's just a big commercial, so.
And I think that there's a reason Adam Sandler is leading the Razzie nominations this year.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, thanks for torturing us with that, Mac. Appreciate it. Daryl, how about... Well, just you mentioning it is torturing. All right, how about you, Daryl?
Well, I can at least say it's a better movie. but no, I reviewed To Catch a Thief, the old Alfred Hitchcock romantic comedy, which I like a lot. And the Blu-ray's fantastic. It's really one of the better Blu-rays I've seen in a little while, and... Cary Grant and Grace Kelly, you can't really go wrong. But other than that, it's been a little bit slow going. Nothing that special looking. Vampire Lovers. Or My Vampire Lover, I'm sorry, which I haven't seen yet,
please.
To say.
Don't confuse the two.
No, God no.
We fans of Vampire Lovers don't want anything associated with
My Vampire, Lover.
Yeah.
But slow going on my part, but nothing so reprehensible as Jack and Jill, so I really don't feel that bad.
All right, Eric, how about you?
I haven't really dug into it too much, but I got the new Mystery Science Theater box set, 23, I think, which has 4 more episodes. And it should be fun.
What's your Mystery Science Theater collection looking like these days?
Yeah, it's looking pretty good, Dave.
Pretty
good. I think I've got the volume 12 from the Rhino years, and then everything else is from Shout Factory. I think I have all but one of the Shout Factory releases, and they started with what was essentially volume 13. So I guess I've had 10 so far, 10 or 11, and I have probably have 9 of those. So pretty good.
Not bad. All right, well, me, it's posted already, but just deserves some little recognition. And it is, of course, Mission Impossible, the 1989 season.
Oh, and, good.
Yeah, so my wife is a big fan of this and made me request the two versions from the 88 and 89. So the 88 one was like, yeah, just kind of your typical 80s action hour-long attempt at coolness that was just so dated and rough. But the 89 one, like... If you knew that they knew this was their last season, so the writers just went crazy with their plots. And I mean, just the very last episode, you could tell that the writers saying, "Well, screw this, I'm going to write the episode that deals with human sacrifice Egyptian cults that I've always wanted to." So Jim Phelps and the gang go investigate this Egyptian cult that is strangling like Egyptian officials and, you know, serving them up to an Egyptian god or something. And I mean, there's all kinds of craziness. There's some hillbilly Nazis are trying to bring back the whatever Reich, and they've got some Nazi kid army they have to deal with. They launch another episode, they launch one of their team members into space, which is they just launch her into space, and another guy gets hit in the face with a helicopter, which is pretty cool. So just really crazy.
Hit in the face.
Yes,
with
hit in the face. Yes. The first episode is on a cliffhanger where our hero is fighting a triad member on a bridge. He's got a sniper rifle, and the triad member throws a ninja star at him, and he catches the ninja star with his sniper rifle. So like nice. The thing just embeds in the sniper rifle. So he manages to best the triad member, and he pulls himself up on top of the bridge, and he looks around quick at it to a helicopter flying right at him, and he gets and it's implied that he gets hit in the face and he falls off the bridge, and then it pauses with him with a terrible blue screen shot of him falling on some water, and then that's beautiful. A cliffhanger for episode 1. Episode 2 picks up with him pulling a parachute. So there you go.
How many episodes deal with abandoned refrigerators?
Not nearly
and the
enough.
Threat. No,
not nearly enough. NASA is actually good guys in this show. They're not the bad guys. So,
or so
but
they say.
If they had a few more episodes optioned, who knows what they would have done. I mean, it was really like the MacGyver syndrome, you know, where MacGyver's hunting down the Holy Grail, and you know,
were these
King Arthur.
Were these seasons on network or were they were they syndicated?
They were CBS, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
It should sound like a syndicated show.
It does. It really it would, you think. But I don't think so. I think they were a legit network show, so. But you're right, it does smell like it would be syndicated. But yeah, pretty crazy. It was just they just went all in. So you gotta respect the show knowing that they're done, just not giving a crap anymore. All right, so Mac, why don't we sprint along to the next phase here?
Sure thing. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down and click on the cover art gallery for March 6th and just talk about what's on the list. Definitely the big release of the week has got to be Game of Thrones, right?
Correct.
Yes. Which, are you reviewing that, Dave?
I am. That's true. I was to score that one.
Good for you. I am reviewing Columbus Circle that is on this list, but that doesn't look very good.
Definitely, is my favorite. Probably the best show on TV right now. So, you know, I think that's. I mean, it's really unlike anything out there right now. So, very cinematic, very cool.
And we got 9.5 weeks on Blu-ray since Zalman King just died a couple of weeks ago.
A lot of stuff on Blu-ray, a lot of the Universal 100th anniversary releases.
Yeah,
not
so
the movies,
are those Blu-rays? Are those Blu-rays?
No, they're not. They've got the blue. They look like it. The packaging looks like
very
it.
Very blue. Yeah. Like Last Temptation of Christ is a DVD, for example.
Right. Well, Blues Brothers is a Blu-ray.
Yeah, The Nutty Professor is a Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. So they're mixing them up a little bit.
Yeah.
But they all do. They do all look like Blu-rays.
So many confused grandmothers shopping. You know what to buy their grandson for their birthday.
Look, Dave. I think confused grandmothers are probably still buying VHS tapes. So.
That's right.
Dude, The Jerk on back on DVD. I haven't seen The Jerk in a long time.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Was it a new?
That's not Blu-ray though.
It's another one of the 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about this movie. As goofy as it is, there's some really cool parts in it, and it's The Immortals. I was just thinking about that movie. So that's coming out this week. Like really goofy and ridiculous in some points, but kind of gloriously violent. It gives you a sneak peek at the guy who's playing Superman too.
Well, speaking of Blu-ray, you got Monty Python and the Holy Grail out on Blu-ray for the first time.
Oh yeah, and The Meaning of Life. Oh, but that's not Blu-ray.
That's not Blu-ray.
It's confusing.
It's confusing.
Universal!
I like 1313 Bigfoot Island. That looks like a winner.
Is that the address where you send Bigfoot mail to?
That's right.
when you send your Christmas list to Bigfoot. That's where you send.
Let's see. There's Jack and Jill, right?
Oh, yeah, there.
Way
to
be.
I'm surprised it's not like, you know, doesn't have advertisements plastered all over the cover.
As seen on TV.
Ooh, Chuck Norris, Forest Warrior, looks pretty awesome.
Forest Warrior?
He's going all Native American there.
Yeah, that's right.
And the new version of Footloose, is that correct?
Yes,
that's
correct.
Yeah, that's the remake. Yeah,
thank goodness.
Yeah, that was begging for a remake. I think.
So many questions.
Yeah, this re-release of Francis the Talking Mule. I dare somebody to take that face of Francis and Photoshop it onto the poster of War Horse.
That would be good.
It would be like War Horse with PTSD. Oh, they made a. So apparently they made a Tooth Fairy 2 with Larry the Cable Guy.
These fan favorites releases you're seeing a lot of here. You know, like
Best
of MacGyver. What is the. Who makes those decisions, you know?
Because
my criteria are a lot different, I'm going to guess, than someone else's.
It's like the 7 that makes sense.
I know. It is rocking a 2-star review.
I know. So that one fan isn't very happy with that selection. Actually, so there's a lot to sift through on this one. But, all right. Well, feel free to peruse, purchase, and support the verdict. So, inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week. Eric, why don't you go first?
I'll go with The Egg and I. The Egg and I.
Not the inadvertently IVF release. All right, Mac.
The Search for One-Eyed Jimmy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. You may have just won. All right.
You won.
Daryl, go ahead.
All right. All right, well, I'm just going to go easy and say Happy Days.
All right. I'm going to go with the the euphemism entry here and say Tennessee Tuxedo. That means, but
all I know is it's illegal in 7 states.
Okay, ambush topics, random topics thrown at each other. I will start off. Speaking of, we talked a little bit about Star Wars, so we'll go on with the Lucas kick. Big news, the Indiana Jones franchise is coming to Blu-ray. So what CGI manipulations is Lucas going to do to piss fans off with this one? Or can he do it? Yeah. How about the ones that – so stuff that he'd really piss people off getting in there messing around.
You change the heart to a spleen.
Heart to a spleen. I don't know. The spleen seems more violent, though, don't you think?
Yeah, but it's just so much harder to recognize. You have to take his word for it.
Okay.
I don't think I could recognize a spleen on sight.
I think that would disturb me more, to be honest. I was watching that, and Mola Ram is – ripping out a guy's spleen or appendix even, right, man? And it's just like, like the heart, you know, the guy's going to be dead. I mean, that guy should have been dead, obviously. But, you know, rip out the spleen, that's just...
That's
so Mola Ram, though. Yeah.
I'm going to say in Temple of Doom, the coal car coming down being changed into a Disney ride.
Rough.
Well, just we got to, you know... We got a blue screen Shia LaBeouf into more scenes.
Oh,
so, oh good.
Yeah, wow, yeah. Indy's running from the boulder, and there's Shia running right along next to him. And,
just swinging on monkey vines. And all.
Exactly.
Nice. All right, I'll give you two. One with what's-his-face getting his face melted, screaming, no! You know, like all those guys screaming no, maybe, because Lucas loves the nose. And,
he does love the nose.
He does. He loves them.
I know firsthand now.
You do? That's right.
I've seen it.
You've seen it in action. And then,
we need the guy at the end of Last Crusade to also yell no so they can quote-unquote bookend.
That's good.
Right.
As he grows old and dies, right? I will go with, and then my last one was going to be, he digitally alters Short Round to make him shorter and rounder. That's more poetic. Okay, Mac, go ahead. What do you got?
All right. Well, in honor of Jack and Jill, if we can honor something that putrid, scenes that take place aboard cruise ships.
I'm going to say the first and last scene of the Arrested Development series.
Oh, good.
Very nice. Yeah.
The Queen Mary, right?
Upon the Queen Mary, yeah. I don't know if it's both times.
Episode, yeah.
The whole first episode and the end of the last episode.
And I mean, the SEC has boats.
Yeah, the SEC still has boats?
Still boats.
All right, well, you know, I never actually saw this movie, but I'll use it anyway. I'll go with Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Cruise Control, right.
Yeah.
It made a giant cruise ship running aground on land and crashing into a beachside resort incredibly boring. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, the other guys, but it's slow and extraordinarily boring.
Yeah. The movie makes a point to explain that no one can just jump off the boat because it's going so fast.
That's right.
Hitting the water would be like hitting rock. I've always wondered if that's a real thing or not.
Yeah, they were desperate to explain that away.
To why they couldn't just jump overboard.
I'll trust water before I trust asphalt.
That's right. All right. So I guess that's to me, a cruise ship. When I started thinking about Arrested Development, I couldn't think of my answer to cruise ship. Now, Under Siege doesn't count as a cruise ship, unfortunately. That popped in my head. I don't think we can count that. Let's see. Okay, I guess I'll... I don't want to do this, but I guess I'll go with the obvious. I guess I'll just go with Propeller Guy from Titanic. That's all I'll go with. That's all I'll say about that movie. Just because it's backed into a car. Go ahead, Mac.
All right. Well, for mine, I went with The Deep Rising.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which had this weird sort of tentacle monster, whatever it was, running around inside the cruise ship. And, you never saw it until the very end. It was always lurking in the shadows and sucking that one lady down into the toilet, which is really tasteful.
Do you think that movie has aged well?
I doubt it.
I think the CGI was suspect even when I watched it years ago.
But then when the monster does show up at the end, it's like huge. It's like gigantic. It fills up like the entire ballroom.
Yeah, but it's just like this gyrating mess of pixels and, you know.
Right. And it's like, how did that thing like fit inside a toilet, you know, 30 minutes earlier?
Which begs the question, is Treat Williams alive or dead? Because I haven't heard from him in a long time, so I don't know if he's alive or dead.
I was about to suggest he was in The Dark Knight, but that was Eric Roberts.
Yeah, right.
Are they the same guy?
They are the same man, actually, correct. They're like Quato from Total Recall. Right? They need to switch places. All right, good. Eric, how about you? What do you got?
All right, my topic is improvised surgery.
Nice, I like that. I'm seeing some synergy with yours. All around removing spleens.
Well, that was your topic, so.
That's true, but hey, your mind went right to the spleen removal. That's all I know. There's probably a million bullet removal scenes. So I don't want to go. That's too easy, probably.
Well, the one that comes to mind for me is Robert De Niro in Ronin, when he has someone else hold the mirror up to his back and then he pulls the bullet out of himself.
Yeah, that's
good. That was nice and grisly.
That's pretty good.
Which Rambo was it that he sewed up his own arm?
Two, right?
It was Rambo 2,
Are you sure it's not 3?
No, it's 3. It might be 3. It was 3.
Because he burns his arm first, right? To, like, to solder stop the bleeding?
Yeah.
I think. It's been a while since I've seen him.
Yeah.
So we're saying Rocky 3.
I guess I'll go with a bullet removal, too. We'll go with Master and Commander, where... Paul Bettany's character had removed that musket ball, you know, from, and he was using a mirror as well, but it seemed a lot more painful. He had to remove a musket ball and, like, the piece of cloth, it got caught.
Oh, that's right.
He had to separate his ribs and all. It was,
that was really gruesome.
That was rough, actually. So, a lot of it was very, it was implied, but.
And the little kid got his arm amputated.
It's true. Yeah. There's some brain surgery, too. Yeah.
Tough stuff.
Serving on that boat. Yeah. All right. Eric, what was yours?
All right. I finally got around to seeing Apocalypto.
Oh, nice. All right.
I hadn't seen it before. I really liked it. I liked it a lot.
I'm glad. It's one of my all-time favorites in a long time.
I like that it showed me a period of time and a culture that I'd never seen in a movie before. Like the whole beginning when they like, you know, basically go on the journey, I guess
shall we say. Walking, right?
Yeah, right. And then they get to the city and there's all, you know, killing and stuff. Anyway, but there's a point, or I think it's earlier on when the wife and the kid are down in the hole and the kid has, you know, cut his foot somehow or his leg. And she's grabbing ants. You remember this? Like these big biting ants, and like puts it up against like the cut, and the ants, you know, put their pinchers in and close it, and then she rips the heads off the ants.
That's right.
She's using like the ant pinchers to like suture up the wound. Yeah, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And
smart.
Plus there was a live water birth too in that. You know,
a live water birth. It's a quite kind of surgery, but that's fair enough.
Now, was not that last hour incredibly thrilling? Would you agree? I mean, to me, it was just like it blew when I first saw it. It just blew me off the couch. We joke about the travelogue, but it really kind of set up the stakes so nicely. You know, that last hour, just the action was the payoff was just so rewarding. So
yeah, I think. I mean, I don't know. I personally think I liked the first part better than the second part, but all of it was thrilling. I mean, the end, as thrilling as it was, kind of felt like it could have been in any really good action movie, whereas the beginning was a very, you know, specific look at a time period I hadn't seen before. But then again, I'm kind of a boring guy.
Apparently.
So but I did know it was great. I mean, I think that, the Jaguar stuff, which you've referenced so many times.
That's right.
You finally got to see.
Yeah, what'd you think of the face eating?
Crazy face eating. There's a lot of blood in that movie.
There is a lot of blood in that movie. Yes.
And I have to say, I think they had a better sort of semi-twist ending than almost any M. Night Shyamalan movie in a recent
movie. That old white man cabal delivered in a big way in that movie.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm glad you were able to watch it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Daryl, why don't you finish it off?
I was speaking of Apocalypto and those kinds of cultures in 2012, I'm just going to say... Premonition, Premonition scenes.
Premonition scenes, all right.
Well, I'll go with a movie I bet none of you have seen, but I've talked about before, I think. It's called The Wild Hunt.
Nope.
Anyway, it's a Canadian sort of, it's a drama slash horror movie that's set in the world of live action role play. And there's basically this guy and his girlfriend are on the rocks.
I think you have mentioned this.
Yeah, this guy and his girlfriend are on the rocks. She goes off to this big LARPing weekend. He goes after her, and he keeps having these dreams where he sees like this door, and the door is flapping open, and she's screaming. And then so he goes out after her. And they never really go into whether or not there's a supernatural thing there, or whether the film is just sort of setting that up. But it really creates this tension throughout the whole movie because you're just waiting for something crazy to happen. And then it does. So I liked it a lot. Anyway,
Premonition.
All right.
I guess the freaky bald psychics from Minority Report.
Ah, yeah, that's good. Okay.
Predicting the stuff in the future. Maybe perhaps
precogs,
a little.
Precogs, yes, right? The precogs.
Precogs, yeah. Perhaps a little convoluted the way they had to float in pools of milk and produce wooden balls that reveal things, but whatever. It's the future. They got flying jetpacks.
That's true. Man, it would suck if they were lactose intolerant, those people.
Yeah, really.
let's see, man. I guess I'll just... It's been kind of played since there's about 30 sequels, but like the very first Final Destination, I thought the Premonition was kind of cool.
I liked Final Destination. Yeah, it's a cool concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've kind of just made it this gore, you know, exhibit from that point on. But like, I recall thinking that because the first one, Daryl, was like the plane explosion, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was handled pretty well, actually. So, I mean, obviously they would kind of rehash that same mechanic and kind of get bloodier and bloodier. I think the second one was like the big logging truck accident and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's super easy.
Right.
You just have some accident that people escape from and then, you know,
that's right. They write
body count up.
And they write, I mean, really, they write those, and it's just like B isn't, so that's just really like, yeah, like I said, just inventive gore. But just that, I think that's, at least for the first movie, I thought that was pretty effective.
I think it's totally good concept, yeah. So. Totally good. I'm going with the Dead Zone, but more specifically the Dead Zone parody from Saturday Night Live that Christopher Walken did, where he did the Dead Zone thing where he touched somebody and saw their future, but it was the most mundane future ever. You're going to go to the store. You're going to buy eggs. You're going to come home.
Christopher, when's the last time he's hosted Saturday Night Live? It's been a while, right?
It's been a little while, yeah. They kind of replaced his catch-all gig with Alec Baldwin.
Right.
But between him and between Baldwin and Walken and John Goodman, the three of them make the funniest Saturday Night Lives.
Yeah. I think Walken is one of the – it's probably been overdone, but the Blue Oyster Cult – you know, Walken, yeah. Blue Oyster Cult.
Of course, yeah. I think that was the same episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking it was. I'm not 100% sure of that, but
nice.
Yeah, I watched an episode of Saturday Night Live relatively recently, and I hadn't seen one in a long time. It's amazing how many of the jokes are just people doing impressions.
Is it? Really? I haven't seen a Saturday Night Live episode in years.
And I'm sure it's been that way for a long time, but there's so much of it is just this guy is doing an impression of this person, and that is the joke. And
yeah.
I don't understand. I don't know.
I've always I've been a periodic watcher for 25 years, and I've watched a few this season and a few last season. And it's as hit and miss as it ever was. You know, I feel like if you go back and look at a 1992 episode of Saturday Night Live and watch all 90 minutes of it, 45 minutes of it are god awful.
Yeah, I think that's
and I think that's the case today. And I think if you cut them down and give everybody a best of Saturday Night Live for a year, over a year, you get some pretty funny bits. But if you make somebody watch 90 minutes a week, it gets pretty.
Which is really amazing because a lot of that, what doesn't make the cut in those, Larry David famously had only one sketch of his ever made in Saturday Night Live, and it was like the very last sketch in the show. So you got to think, what's not making the cut.
Yeah, it's a very specific, sense of humor, and it is entirely Lorne Michaels. It's whatever he likes. So, and I guess he likes celebrity impressions.
Okay.
So celebrity impressions and sketches that go on way too long. I guess those are the two.
Well, that's tradition.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. Well, that is the end of the Friday Filibuster. So, thank you for tuning in. A lot of ground covered here. There's something for everyone in this episode.
And you know what? It's all because we didn't have to worry about talking about He-Man or The Simpsons or Star Trek.
That reminds me of this episode. Speaking of premonitions, He-Man had his premonition.
Dave?
Mac, take us away.
Hulk smash.